Wednesday, and welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up on feature reports in today's show is the My Ag Life in Citrus episode, where we will hear about ethyl formate usage potential and its upcoming approval. Also, a report on a California Department of Fruit and Agriculture Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program. I'll have a look at national agricultural news, but first, a check-in of regional agricultural news, and that will start us off right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In regional agricultural news, organic California avocados soared above $100 per carton of 48s on both the San Francisco and LA wholesale produce markets recently, according to the USDA Daily National Specialty Crop Organic Summary. The most recent report listed California 48s at $109 to $110 in Los Angeles and $115 in San Francisco. Rob Wedden, Senior Vice President and General Manager of the Grown Division for Calavo Growers, was not surprised. He said that the freight on board price for the most popular sized organic avocados was $80 to $85. He noted that wholesalers must add their markup as well as cover the cost of transportation to their facilities. While $100 should be sufficient to buy a box of avocados off the market in May, Wadden said that the avocado market has been very strong since the middle of February, and he does not expect a drop anytime soon. That could be especially true for organic avocados, as Mexico's volume in the category is on the decline. The longtime Calavo veteran said demand has been excellent for organic fruit all season long, which points to a thinning of supplies from Mexico, the largest producer of all avocados, including organics. Wadden said organic production from California is on a rise, and some organics from Peru will enter the marketplace in May, though the bulk of Peruvian avocados, both organic and conventional, are expected to be marketed from mid-June through mid-August. All indicators point to a strong organic avocado market well into the summer. Local lawmakers and Native American leaders are speaking out in favor of a new bill to add almost 4,000 acres to Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument in Northern California. The bill would add an area known as Walker Ridge to the monument and change its name to Condor Ridge. Ben Desi, public information officer, said the land has been inhabited by local tribes for more than 11,000 years. The Bureau of Land Management currently oversees the area. A few years ago, developers proposed a windmill project that did not come to fruition. Backers of the bill said the land to the monument would protect the area from future development. Lake County Supervisor E.J. Crandall, a member of the Robinson Rancheria tribe, said the windmills would have endangered the raptors native to the area. The bill would also formalize a partnership between the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and the tribes to co-manage the land for historic preservation, archaeological sites, and forest health. The Senate version was introduced by Senators Dianne Feinstein and Alex Padilla, both Democrats of California. It mirrors a House version sponsored by Representatives John Garamendi and Mike Thompson, both of California. The California Department of Food and Agriculture Pierce's Disease Glassy-Winged Sharpshooter Board approved $1.9 million in new funding for 16 research projects for fiscal year 2022 to 2023 and a total of $2.7 million in new funding over the next 3 years for research to address Pierce's disease, grapevine viruses, and vectors at an April 26 meeting held in Sacramento. The board received 22 research proposals for FY 2022 to 23 from its annual request for proposals and approval recommendations of the Research Screening Committee, chaired by board member Steve McIntyre of Monterey Pacific Vineyards and composed of an 11-member research screening panel. Researchers apply for grant funding for projects ranging from 1 to 3 years. For multi-year research proposals, the RCS in some cases will recommend full funding for up to 3 years. In other cases, the RSC will recommend project funding for 1 year to evaluate progress and results and allow the researcher to apply for additional funding in a next RFP cycle to continue work on the project. The board is funding 5 continuing multi-year projects previously approved that totaled $567,000 for FY 2022-23. The board forwards its recommendations to the CDFA secretary for final approval that historically have always been approved. Here is an example of some of the projects that were funded: a 3-year project to develop tools for precise breeding of grapevine cultivators for resistance to PD, a 3-year project to continue field evaluation of cross-graft protection effective against PD by dual DNA constructs expressed in transgenic grape rootstocks, and funding for a 1-year project to continue developing an efficient DNA-free non-transgenic genome editing methodology in grapevines. This project will investigate the use of gene editing technology for potential use to integrate resistance into grapevines for PD and viruses. The Mexican tomato season is winding down, causing Roma and vine ripe prices to rise. The outlier on pricing comes from Florida's volume surging, sending mature green prices down. Florida weather has been favorable for tomatoes, and Marcon Cooperative reported this week that harvests are going well from the Ruskin Palmetto, Florida region. Roma, round, cherry, and grape tomato quality is good, according to Marcon. Large sizes dominate the market as new fields are being harvested. Mexico vine ripe and mature green production will continue to decline through May, the last month of the season. The late season round tomato quality is good, with medium sizes dominating. Western Mexico has had a mix of new crop existing Roma acreage, with jumbo and extra large sizes most plentiful, according to Marcon. Grape tomato production will transition to Baja, including California and Mexico, over the next month. Quality may dip over the next few weeks. The California desert region will begin limited round tomato production starting in mid-May, with the bulk of the California summer season being in mid-June. The Napa Valley Grape Growers, Napa Valley Venters, and Napa Valley Firewise organized a Fire Resources Fair at the Napa Valley College's Upper Valley campus to help the community and wine industry representatives prepare for the annual wildfires. Napa Firewise is a nonprofit organization that focuses on lowering the risks of wildfire through mitigation and other means. About 200 people pre-registered for the 4-hour event. Among the 30-plus vendors who set up booths in a community college's courtyard were representatives from forestry management companies, insurance brokers, fire prevention suppliers, and nonprofit organizations, such as the community organizations active in disaster. The Napa County Sheriff's Office and other agencies also had a booth, as did Measure L, the proposed fire prevention quarter-cent sales tax on a June 7th ballot. The fair is a one-stop shop to meet with vendors and resource providers to make sure that people are in the best position possible to be prepared for fire season, according to Michelle Novi, Industry Relations and Regulatory Affairs Director at Napa Valley Venters.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
Taylor Chalstrom is in with the first feature report on ethyl formate.
Last week, the California Citrus Quality Council invited the industry to attend an open meeting to discuss options for the use of ethyl formate and how it could be incorporated into ACP control programs or quarantine control programs. The purpose of the meetings were to solicit input from the industry on how the industry would like to use ethyl formate as a fumigant.
It has a couple different uses. You can use it in a chamber like you would any other fumigant. But this one also has a little bit of a unique use in that we're going to be able to use it out in a citrus grove immediately after harvest. So the idea would be that you go ahead and harvest your fruit right into field bins. You can stack those field bins on the edge of a grove. And then you'll be able to actually tarp that those staged bins and then do a fumigation right there in the grove. And typically we're talking about a 1-hour fumigation, and that's going to control bean thrips. It's going to control Asian citrus psyllid, some other surface pests like California red scale, things like that.
That was Jim Cranny, head of the California Citrus Quality Council. He said that the use of ethyl formate started to come about in the industry when there was a shift away from spray and move programs.
We don't want to spread ACP all around California when we harvest the fruit. We learned from the lessons in Florida that when you move the fruit around, there's a very good chance you're going to move psyllids along with it. And we don't want to distribute the psyllid all around California as we move the fruit around from the harvest locations. So what we're trying to do here is come up with an alternative to the spray and move treatments where you have to put on a pesticide application before you harvest your fruit in order to kill the life stages of ACP and make sure that we're not moving ACP with the fruit. So this gives us another tool in the toolbox so that we'll be able to potentially replace spray and move. It's going to be very situational in terms of specific circumstances. Some packing houses, some growers may find this to be extremely useful. And then on the other hand, we may have cases where, you know, it still makes more sense to just do the spray and move treatments. But one of the pressures we've been faced with over the years and more recently, as we've been spraying more and more for ACP, we're starting to develop resistance. And we're starting to hear about secondary pest outbreaks. The California citrus industry has always been a huge proponent of integrated pest management. And we're finding that these treatments for ACP are really blowing up a lot of our IPM programs. So this is another option. It's not perfect, but it can be extremely useful in specific circumstances.
The issue of psyllids developing resistance to chemicals, of course, will only get worse. Cranny said the industry is being pushed to combat this.
There's a undeniable demand out there that the industry look at this just from a practical, you know, societal standpoint and from a marketing standpoint. But then we have the other practical issues of resistance building up, and the spray and move treatments are, quite frankly, adding to that pressure. And to the extent that we can reduce those applications, we're making a step in the right direction towards addressing some of these resistance issues. And I would say also that there is another aspect of this that makes it even more desirable, is that in some of our export markets, we have a protocol where we have to control bean thrips, and that would be for New Zealand and Australia. So this same treatment that would be effective for ACP also controls bean thrips. So we're going to be approaching APHIS and our trading partners to see if we can develop this as an alternative treatment for bean thrips for our exports going to New Zealand and Australia. So this would be another, good option for the industry, and probably a better option than actually using phosphine.
Cranny said that the industry is finally reaching a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of registration of ethyl formate for use in citrus, noting that the product will hopefully be available in the first quarter of 2023, and if the industry is lucky, maybe even sooner. As for now, the grower meetings on ethyl formate that the California Citrus Quality Council is holding are key to getting growers' input on the use of the product before it becomes available.
We're right at that stage now where if we need to make some changes to the label, or if we need to make some adjustments in the regulatory process to allow a specific use, we can still do that. But if we go down, you know, probably that road a couple more months now, it may be too late to make some changes. So now's the time where we want to get out to the industry, hear from the industry about what their preferences would be for the use of this new fumigant. And it's a good opportunity for us to just have a discussion about, you know, how it could be used, you know, what attitudes there are about using it, So that's the real purpose. We're reaching out and we're listening. We're trying to hear what the industry preferences are. And with that information, it's going to help the registrant with the marketing, the process of, you know, moving forward with the chemical distribution, logistics. We're going to have training issues. We're going to have regulatory issues. We're partnering with the counties, with DPR, with EPA. And now's the time for us to get more information from the industry and make sure that we're on the right track.
So far, the view is that industry has been providing positive input on the use of ethyl formate as a fumigant, and even the possibility of using it in an organic setting is being explored.
Ethyl formate, you know, it is naturally occurring in the components where it breaks down. They're naturally occurring in the fruit. And we believe that we might be able to get a organic designation for the use. And if we can get that, then it will be very helpful for the organic industry and to have that option, you know, out there for organic growers. So this is something that we're hearing from the industry, that they're interested in, you know, producing organically, and we're trying to respond by making this available and have this option out there for organic growers.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news here today, the Senate Agriculture Committee held its first 2023 Farm Bill hearing in Michigan recently. Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow, a Michigan Democrat, outlined the challenges that farmers face since the 2018 Farm Bill.
The pandemic exposed vulnerabilities in our farm and food economy, as we know. Farmers were whiplashed by low prices and breakdowns in processing, while Americans across the board saw empty shelves and skyrocketing prices. And just as our country has been recovering now economically, Putin's war in Ukraine is threatening the worldwide food supply. The good news is that our farmers have seen commodity prices go up, but that's been offset by rising costs of fertilizer and other essential inputs that they need to do their business. Our next Farm Bill must address the economic security of our farmers, our families, and our rural communities by supporting a more resilient and sustainable food supply chain.
Ranking Member John Bozeman, an Arkansas Republican, echoed Stabenow's comments.
As we kick off this process, we are in an unprecedented time to write a Farm Bill. Just think about the issues that we are confronting. They truly are daunting. A receding pandemic, a brutal war in the breadbasket of Europe, record high inflation, record high fertilizer and input costs, high crop prices, high food costs, labor shortages, drought, delayed planting and transportation and supply chain bottlenecks. The pandemic and Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine have exposed the vulnerabilities of our domestic and international supply chains. This requires us to rethink the nature of our relationships across the globe, strengthening bonds with countries who share similar values, and minimize reliance on those who violate norms.
The hearing titled Growing Jobs and Economic Opportunity 2023 Farm Bill Perspectives from Michigan was held at the STEM Teaching and Learning Facility at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Many unpredictable forces are influencing retail food prices. That makes it very hard to forecast what those prices will do next. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Food prices are rising at an almost unprecedented rate. As to how long this is going to continue?
Yet to be determined.
And USDA economist Matt McLaughlin says it really is impossible to predict food prices beyond a few months now because there are so many forces at work influencing them.
There's an ongoing conflict in Ukraine that has yet to resolve. Its total impact on wheat markets as well as fuel markets and energy markets is not completely identified yet.
But so far, they've pushed food prices up. In this country, bird flu has resulted in millions of chickens and turkeys having to be destroyed. That's boosting poultry and egg prices. Cattle producers are reducing herds because of drought and high livestock feed prices. Less beef means higher prices. As to forces that might cool food price inflation,
the Fed has increased interest rates. This could tighten the money supply,
which Matt says might reduce demand for some foods, might put a little damper on food prices.
So we still have to see how these things play out.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
According to the Environmental Protection Agency, American agriculture's greenhouse gas emissions fell over 4% from 2019 to 2020. The recent inventory of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions shows agriculture represents only 10% of U.S. total emissions, much lower than other economic sectors. American Farm Bureau Federation economists analyzed the EPA data and found that the total agricultural emissions in 2020 fell at least 4.3% or 28.8 million metric tons compared to 2019. Emissions from agricultural soil management, like fertilizer application and tillage practices, were reduced by 8.4%. AFBF President Zippy Duvall says America's farmers are committed to improvements in sustainability. He says farmers are also dedicated to doing even better through market-based voluntary incentives, allowing them to capture more greenhouse gases while meeting the growing demand for food both here and abroad. Compared to 70 years ago, farmers and ranchers get almost three times more out of production than they put in. The war in Ukraine has highlighted just how perilous the world's food supply is. The U.S. and a handful of major food exporters feed the world, but it's not enough. Russia's war on Ukraine, with both countries being huge grain producers, and the expected impact on global food supplies this year proved just how vulnerable food is, a situation likely to get worse without action. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
If population projections are accurate, we would need, as a global community, to increase food production by 50% by the year 2050 in order to feed all of the people in the world.
And Vilsack told lawmakers that won't happen without new technology.
And it's not going to happen unless we have the research that allows us not only to be more productive, but to be more productive in the context of a changing climate where we may have less available water resources in some parts of the world, to be able to continue productivity as we know it today.
From gene editing to drought adaptation and mitigation, Vilsack says it's incredibly important that there be much more research. And USDA is seeking $119 million in added ag and food research funding in its fiscal year 2023 budget requests to Congress.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report continues on. Once again, Taylor Charlstrom joins us, where he has a report on a California Department of Food and Agriculture Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture established the Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program in 2009 to sustain and protect California citrus in accordance with the Food and Ag Code, Section 5911-5940. Its mission is to protect California citrus from invasive pests and diseases through the development and implementation of effective policies and regulations, all while keeping California citrus thriving.
Anytime we're out in commercial groves or residential properties looking at citrus, we're looking for a variety of different pests and diseases. We're looking for things like citrus canker, citrus leprosis, sweet orange scab, Asian citrus psyllid, Wang Long Bing, to just name a few. Of course, our main focus right now is Asian citrus psyllid and Wang Long Bing, because we do have ACP in California, and we are actively eradicating any HLB positive trees that we find in Southern California. Thankfully, to date, we have not found either any trees infected with HLB or any psyllids carrying the bacteria that causes HLB in the valley. All of that has been focused down in the LA Basin and one small infestation down in San Diego County right now.
That was Victoria Hornbaker, the Pest and Disease Prevention Program's director. While pests like Asian citrus psyllid are up and coming in California, she's confident that it won't reach the Central Valley, at least not in detrimental numbers.
I'm really hopeful that with everything that we're doing and everything that the growers are doing and the nurseries are doing and the packing houses, I mean, it's a very collaborative effort, that we're able to prevent the movement of any psyllids carrying the bacteria or the bacteria into the valley. When we do find ACP in the valley, we get on that right away. We do a treatment and we do a delimitation with the intent of achieving a local eradication. So we really try to eradicate that ACP, that incipient population. And then, like I said, everything that we're doing in response to HLB in Southern California to remove the inoculum, take out the trees, destroy them. So even though there may be psyllids, they're not going to find those infected trees. They're not going to acquire the bacteria and move it around. One of the other things that we have found and are working on right now is sweet orange scab. That's also in Southern California. Detections in Imperial, Orange, Riverside, and LA. Much, much smaller, and it's not what you could consider HLB being an industry-ending disease. Sweet orange scab's a fungal pathogen, and it's not going to end the California citrus industry.
The Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program participates in an extensive amount of prevention efforts with growers and residents as well.
We really are very keen on engaging citizen scientists, so we do a lot of outwork with the residents. Have you seen this pest? Here's how you report it. How do you care for your citrus trees? So trying to get that information out there, because we know that growers are doing a good job, right? It's their livelihood. We want to help residents do a good job to protect California citrus as well. So we hit those three different things. Like I said, local elected officials, because if I'm a resident and something's going on in my neighborhood, who's the first person I'm going to call? It's my local county or state or city official, right? And then the residents, we try to get as much information out there to them. And then also industry, because we want them to also remember, hey, we've got to continue to engage. This is an important issue. We can't rest on our laurels. We had the first ACP detection here in 2008. Here we are at 2022, and knock on wood, we've not had an HLB positive in a commercial grove. So the growers are doing a tremendous job to protect themselves, and we want to remind them to stay vigilant.
Hornbaker said that it's encouraging for the Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program that growers are involved in checking for Huanglongbing or Asian citrus psyllid, even those in the Central Valley that are less affected by it.
They're aware of it. They're looking for it. They've got scouts out looking for, the symptoms of the disease. They're, actively trapping on their groves for ACP. They engage when we ask them to, do a treatment if we've had an ACP in the area. So that's always very encouraging. But also, just the fresh, novel and kind of innovative ideas that come from just sitting down and talking with folks like, hey, have you ever thought about, doing something this way? Well, no, that's a great idea. Let's take it back and crunch the numbers and see if it's something that we can implement. Today specifically, we talked about the ACP detector dogs and the work that they're doing, and we're partnering with them. That's a very encouraging new technique. Another thing, and I don't know if you talked to them today, but a technology with a company called CropTix, where they're able to take a stamp out of a leaf and determine if that leaf is positive for HLB. That work is something, again, that we're partnering with them to give them, our team at CDFA is taking their tool and giving them readings so that they can improve, so any of those things where we can build partnerships, it's always great to sit down and talk to folks.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.